Welcome to Design Ops Island Discs, the weekly podcast from Zero Height that navigates the calm waters of Design Ops with your host, me, Luke Murphy. I'm a design advocate at Zero Height, and I'm talking to the best folks in Design Ops to navigate us through what it takes to float Design Ops within your design org. For this week's episode, which marks the last episode of Season 2, I'm joined by Patrizia Bertini, Associate Director of Design Ops at Babylon. Today we talk about change management in Design Ops, why it's an often misunderstood but essential part of any organizational change, how you convince your bosses to let you go slow to go fast, winning over the team with changes to their processes and tooling, and why we might need Design Ops at the C-suite level. Without further ado, let's set sail. So I suppose to start with, Patrizia, it'd be really good to understand what your path into Design Ops was.
It was an odd one. My background is mostly research, accessibility, usability. I started back in Paleolithic 2000. And at a certain point, I started setting up research practices. And when you set up a practice, you always want your team to be and have the best experience. So you don't want any inefficiencies. You don't want stakeholders going and bothering them and asking questions or interrupting. So I started thinking about processes and how processes can be streamlined to reduce overhead from the teams. And then looking at what are the tools that can help streamlining. And initially I was doing that in agencies, and then I moved into in-house, where the level of complexity when you do research and you have designers in-house and content designers increases. And I just saw a lot of inefficiencies. I mean, time is the only non-renewable resource we have, right? So we need to use it wisely. And when I started seeing a lot of inefficiencies, I just did research what I could do the best. And I came up with a roadmap saying, hey, we need to improve how design and research work, the end-to-end workflow and the processes. And before I knew, I was told that my manager was looking for a design ops leader. And I was really interested. And this is when I learned that what I was doing was called design ops.
It's the thing where it's like just people trying to make people's lives better, right? And the other designers' lives better.
Exactly. So someone is good at designing pixels, journeys, experiences, and someone is good at designing processes. That's all about it.
Exactly. That's it. That's it. I like to always talk about it as it's like turning the concept of product design back in on itself and just focusing not on the product, but on the team itself, right?
Exactly. It's very meta. It's UX for UXers.
So
Look at the UX team experience to make sure that they have the best experience. And it's really just focusing on the how. The way I always describe design operations is a great design leader should have the big vision for what is the product, what is the experience, what is the light for the customers. And on the other side, you have someone that needs to take care on how we bring alive that experience. Those are very different skills. It's a very different mindset. It's a very different focus. It's either you look outside at the customer, the experience, or you look at how that experience is brought to life and delivered by the team. So it's just focusing on the how we enable the designers and the design leaders to deliver experiences that matters.
And that's it. I'm so happy that this seems to be happening now, because I think up until relatively recently, like the last 4 or 5 years, felt like a lot of companies just assumed one person could do all of this as well. it's a bit too much for one person. And as you said, it's completely different skill. Well, not completely different skill sets, but it's different focuses and different priorities, right?
And also different mindsets. I mean, the time it takes to identify the right vendors, create partnerships with your vendors and suppliers, create and rework the journeys and the designer's experience, it's something that takes time if you want to do it right. And this is how probably in the past, I mean, I don't know you, but I had some design managers that were very process-focused and others that were very product-focused. Now, each of them have a place. One is more on the operation side, which is critical, as well as the product strategy is critical and essential. So it's kind of allowing everyone to be the best they can be in the domain they enjoy and they like.
Yeah, exactly. So I suppose one of the things that I know you best for is all of your amazing articles that you've been putting up on, on UX Collective, which I definitely recommend following Patrizia on Twitter so that you can just see all the articles that she posts. I don't know how you find time to write them all. One of the most recent ones was around change management as part of your design up strategy, which I find really interesting. I don't know, I feel like back in big organizations, it was one of those things that I never wanted to pay attention to and felt like that boring thing that those people in the corner did. But having read your article, it's something that a lot of design ops folks, especially folks in smaller organizations, don't seem to really care about enough when they're thinking about how to implement change in their org. So I suppose to start off with, you know, for those who haven't read the article, what highlighted this as a problem to you in terms of this lack of change management in the design org?
It's not necessarily a problem, it's the awareness and also how you interpret design ops. So design ops is still emerging. There are a lot of flavors, a lot of different shades of design operations. For me, design operations, it's a highly transformative discipline. Yep. If you think about, my background is in linguistics, so words are important and words matter. So operations, if you look at the business dictionary, is defined as the act of changing the existing to bring more value to the customers and the users. Hey. Now, if you apply that to design operations, so operations means that we bring some change, so we transform reality, we take what we have to bring more value to who are the customers, we have the design leaders, we have the design team, and we have the business. So what is design operations? It's about changing the status quo to bring more value to whoever is involved in the design function.
Yep.
So if you start with that premises, change management becomes the most critical skill. Because if you are thinking that you deal with human material that is working in a certain way and you see that they are frustrated, I mean, design operations role is a lot of listening and a lot of taking in complaints from every side, but not just to show empathy, but to change that. And because we deal with humans and because design operations aims to change and deliver more value, it's all how we make sure the change is effective. So we can't have design operations that it's stuck in a room and says, hey, from tomorrow, we all go with this new process, whatever, the new intake requirement process or the new delivery process or the new tool.
Yeah.
Unless you bring everyone on the journey, you will fail. My approach is bring everyone on the same journey, share and make sure you listen and work with examples. So it's change management because people won't trust you unless you give them a reason to trust you. And how can you deliver more value if you don't transform your organization, your team, your ways of working, your budgeting, your relationship with vendors, your skill assessment and your career progression?
That's the thing, is that a lot of people assume that they do the first part. They look at the problems and they talk to a lot of people. They gather a lot of the information. Then they synthesize that. They come up with a solution. Putting that solution in place seems to be the bit where they fall down and kind of go, well, we have the solution. Here it is. Go.
Yeah. But if no one is adopting your solution, it's not a solution, it's a problem.
Exactly. And it's funny because it's like, I know that you talked a lot about how, because, you know, one of the favorite things of design leaders is double diamond approach, right? And you talk about like putting that extra diamond layer in there, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Because how does it work? So literally, what is design ops for me? It starts with listening. So I see the double diamond starting with an extra element, which is the intake, listening, the empathy. So what is the empathy? What is people telling you? And then try to create, assess, and have hypotheses. So I'm a big fan of Lean UX. So assess the problem, get data, quantify the pain, and then play it back to the team. Not just to the leadership team, not just to your peers, but to everyone in the design org, and make sure we agree that these are the pains. So this is what I've heard. This is how I have rationalized. This is how I quantify. This is how I prioritize. Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
It's step number one. It's what we were mentioning, the Lewin framework, the unfreeze stage. So in change management, you have to create the conditions when you realize that there's potential for improvement and that problems are just the step before a solution. So we need to create the urgency and the awareness that, hey, this is causing problems. And this is causing problems that we can quantify in a number of working days lost, in number of budget spent, in quality, quantity of rework that the teams are doing, whatever unit you want to take. So if we all agree that there's an urgency, there's a problem, it can be quantified, we can also agree that, okay, should we start thinking about solutions? And this is where the change happens, with the buy-in from everyone and from the team, because at that point, design operations, it's in a position to bring ideas to the table and find allies and people to say, hey, you know what? I have this idea in mind. Can we take one of your projects and try it out if it works? There are always in every team someone that feels the pain more than others, or that it's more curious to try out things because they're fed up with how things have been running until that moment. So finding the ally and start running an experiment will help to assess how the problem can be solved, will also create an internal advocate, which is extremely important, because in change management, nothing that starts from the top is well perceived down. So if I want to make sure everyone in the team is happy and excited, I need to have a couple of advocates within the team that will amplify my voice and speak the same language and translate what is my big idea, what is my strategy, what is my concept into, hey, you know what, we will be saving 2 days worth of work because we cut this and this.
Yeah.
That's what matters. But that's the language that they will be using to kind of expand. And this is how, by one experiment to another, one trying out, someone else wanting to join because they heard, and then start the rollout, implementing. So lean UX, you do MVP number one, you learn, you improve, you bring more people on board. MVP number three, you have more people on board. And before you know, everyone is doing it. And not because you ask them to do, because they start seeing the value. Because design operations, it's about showing, not telling. And that's my big motto. And to stay with Lewin and model, that's the moment when you freeze and you say, okay, that's the process. This is what we are going to do. This is how we do things now. Because, hey, it takes time. I mean, it's not something that you do overnight. But it's the concept of going slow to go fast. Assess the problem. Find allies. Test. Enlarge your test base. Improve your testing and results, and then consolidate.
It's interesting because I think there's the whole we need to go slow to go fast. Because, by the way, I think that this is amazing. I think that the whole concept of what you're talking about is very similar to the product process and UX process, right? We're talking about having pilot users or beta users and sort of seeing if it works and doing the experimentation and then rolling it out to a wider group of users. This is standard stuff for, like, for product designers and UX designers. Just doesn't seem to be standard for a lot of people when they're doing organizational change.
But I think that, you know what, the path to design ops, it's all confused, so there's not a clear path. So you will have people that may be coming from a very project management type of approach, where they may be lacking that aspect of how you roll out design, how you do design, and how you test ideas. And that's on one side. But on the other side is also the idea that some people think that all you need to do to change things is to tell people to do things differently. And that's poor management. So some organizational studies would help and change management would be critical. But I know it's not something that a lot of people are comfortable or even interested. As you said, at the beginning, you don't really see the value. But the thing is, you don't see the value until someone comes and say, from tomorrow, this is how you do it. And you just say, the first reaction is, why? And the next reaction is, no.
Yep.
And then it follows, I hate you, you're terrible, you don't understand me. Rather than saying, hey, are you up for a challenge? Should we do something fun together? And then you roll out everything.
But that makes sense. So I suppose the interesting thing around the whole going slow to go fast, that sounds like that's going to be problematic for some senior leaders, because their whole thing is around it's speed and speed of delivery and everything needs to be delivered faster. And even though the end goal is going fast, as you said, it's slow to go fast. How do you convince them in the first place to actually invest that time and energy into? I mean, I suppose hiring a design ops is usually a good sign and the fact they care about. But for people, I suppose, who are trying to carve out this practice, I mean, you mentioned some of the measures and metrics that you talked about. Has there been anything that it feels like a silver bullet?
Oh, it's exactly quantifying. I mean, my pushback is I'm here to have an impact. To have an impact, I need to map out where we are today and have confidence all the issues, or at least have some directional metrics that will help me to come back to you in 6 months, 12 months and say, okay, my impact has been to increase the delivery time by 20%, reduce the number of rework hours by 30%, reduce the spending by 60%. And it's not difficult to do. But otherwise, how are you going to be assessed and evaluated if you don't have metrics?
Yep.
And I'm not good at saying I'm good, I'm great, or whatever. I want to be able to quantify. So the pushback is always on what are you going to assess me if I don't have an objective view? And it's also trying to find the fine balance between collecting data, analyzing data, and presenting back.
Yeah.
So there always should be, and what I always try to do is to give the impression of progressing and that things are moving. So don't hide in a room and say, okay, for the next 3 months, leave me alone. I'm going through all the spending, all the POs, all the processes, doing surveys, doing interviews, etc. It's kind of keeping a constant dialogue so that it's evident that things are happening until there's a big share out.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, every time I start a new job, at the beginning, there's always, what are you doing and what is happening? And I'm assessing the situation. And then we get to either the assessment share out or to the quarterly review. I tend to have design of quarterly reviews and saying, okay, this is it. This is the roadmap. This is what I've heard. Now you tell me if we are on the same page. And at that point, it's when people start saying, okay, in 3 months, because that's roughly 3 months, is how long does it take for me to review all the spending, all the operations, all the design OPMEX, operational mechanics of how they work, all the cross-functional engagement, and have an overview of what are the opportunities areas. And 3 months for a new joiner in a company or someone starting in that role, it's not a massive amount of time, given that you will have an impact and you won't have to redo that every month.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah. It's interesting because I think everything you said there makes sense, especially when you're talking to that senior leadership level and sort of your bosses and the people who sign the paychecks. On the other side, when you're trying to convince the design team who may not, because I mean, there are a lot of design teams that don't sort of see the, you know, again, they're very focused on production. They don't really see the value in trying. They're like, why would we change this? We're doing okay. Kind of attitude seems to be quite common. Do you use a different set of metrics and different set of approaches to convincing them of the value so that you can get those internal advocates? Or I suppose, do you just identify those, you know, pilot people who are really passionate?
I tend to identify the pilot people. You won't have everyone at the same page. So, I mean, I had cases where I had rejectors, but then there were more advocates than rejectors. So suddenly they started changing the narrative from, well, we don't need it, and, well, I can try it. Simply because there are people that are naturally change resistant, people that stick to their way of working, people that don't enjoy leaving their comfort zone. They have their processes, they have everything outlined for ages, or they're just used to work in a certain way.
Yep.
So for them, the trade-off needs to be a huge change and a big impact. So there are people that are more flexible and open to try things, and people that really need to see, okay, actually this is allowing me to finish work at 5:30 rather than 6. That's good enough.
That's usually a very good way to convince
yes.
convince designers. It's interesting. So I suppose, do you find that there is also a large education piece in what you do as well? Like, how much of your time do you tend to spend doing that internal education around these practices, the values? I mean, especially when you're putting a new thing in place.
There are two pieces of education that goes on and on. First of all, who is design operations? For a lot of people, it's a new role. So at all levels, it's about trying to position design operations and the role and the responsibility. Mm. But then education is something absolutely critical, because if you want a team that works, it has to be a team that is smart and knows how to use things and makes the most out of every tool and every opportunity. But again, it's not something that I decide.
Yeah.
I ask. I listen. So again, Double Diamond, where we go and we start listening, we start prototyping, we test and iterate, and then we play back and we keep listening. In every survey I do and in the various one-to-ones I have, I always try to understand what are the big opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people want to learn more about accessibility. Sometimes it's more analytics. Sometimes it's more leadership, because we need to optimize the resources and the time. It's about playing back. I've heard you saying that you would like trainings in this, this, and this. I can help you. So, for instance, one of the things that I did was, I'm still doing, working on creating data-informed designers.
Hey,
so this what I call the pie-shaped designers instead of the T-shaped designers. So designers that speak the same language as product managers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have ever heard about tensions between PMs and designers.
No, I've never heard of this before.
But in some cases, not all cases, but in some cases, this is literally caused by the fact that why designers tend to talk empathy all the way around, and user persona and the journey, and oh my God, Tom, our persona really loved this part of the journey. And then suddenly you have the PM saying, no, we need to redesign the whole part of the journey that Tom really likes. And this is how design feels, kind of. They're not listening to us. But the truth is, I really believe that design thinking should evolve into a data-informed design thinking that combines the empathy element with the behavioral data we can get from analytics. So that's a big part of trainings that I've been doing in different settings for now. It would be probably a couple of years, because it's important to make sure designers grow into that. But first of all, make sure designers understand the value of why it's important to utilize that. And this is why the training and the educational piece is never, ever about a tool. It's about a mindset.
Yeah.
So it's about creating the skills to use the tools that the organization is putting in the hands of the designers, but also giving them the mindset to start thinking and understanding the value and the added value they can have if they start applying a different approach to design and integrating design with those data. But it has always to be a kind of listen, play back, until we are not aligned that you really want a design, a data analytics training, don't you?
Yeah, it's the softly, softly approach to and making sure that they're actually understanding. It's
exactly.
It's weird, because it's like, I feel like a lot of my early managers probably needed to understand this instead of just belligerently telling me what to do.
I'm sure there are a lot of old school managers that think that your role is, and it's good intention, it's just the execution that lacks that empathy element. You have to use design thinking. Double Diamond, listen, empathy, empathize, and play back.
So if somebody wants to learn more around, because it's interesting, you're talking about, is it Lewin or Levin's model? I never know how to pronounce it.
Neither I, so I called it Levin. But,
cool.
Levin, if anyone knows better, let us know.
So, I mean, this is obviously a like entrenched traditional change management sort of framework, right? So if anybody wants to sort of learn more around that kind of traditional space of change management, have you found any good resources that, you know, you would recommend? Anything to stay away from?
No, I would say start with the basics. So they're very complex and very complicated change management models. Personally, I use Levin because it's simple. I mean, unfreeze, so create the urgency, experiment and then consolidate, freeze again. So yeah. It's simple enough to be applied to a lot of domains. You will have a lot of different models. What is good, what is bad? The truth is I read a lot, I read very fast, and I forget the names of everything. Yeah. But, you know, Kotler, the classics are always good. There's nothing to stay away, because I always believe that models that don't work, if we understand that they don't work, it means that they helped us to apply critical thinking and to understand why they are not fit for purpose.
Yep.
So my advice, and also what I do, I read everything, mm-hmm. and then I just pick what works. If I find that something doesn't work, I need to be able to explain myself why not.
Very sensible approach. So I suppose I'm going to get towards the end of the podcast now. But before we ship you off to your island, let's first talk about some more design ops stuff. What's exciting you about the future of design ops at the moment? Or what do you see as the most important thing that we should be focusing on?
Well, you know, design ops, it's in a fantastic moment. It's yeah. extremely fluid. The whole pandemic, in a way, also helped to raise the focus and the attention towards mm-hmm. maybe someone needs to take care of all these distributed teams, people living and working everywhere. And, you know, the old model of we are in the office, I can have an eye on all of you, I know what you're doing, and it's not working. So
yep.
The pandemic really helped to kind of consolidate the idea that, you know, having someone that looks at the operations for a design team, it's important. And the biggest challenge for me at this moment, and I think what is the biggest challenge, it's not so much how it consolidates and the best practices, but it's an altitude issue. There are a lot of design operations practitioners that operate at very different altitudes. The way I see and where I hope design ops is headed is to be the equivalent of the COO for the CEO, where we will have the chief design officer. I made a joke with a friend, the CODO, the chief operation design officer, whatever. But that's the level of altitude, because yeah. operations is not tactical, it's strategic before. You need to have a strategy on how you implement efficiencies. What are the efficiencies that matter the most? What is the biggest business impact those efficiency can have, and how those business impact can be translated into benefits for the teams. Because if I'm able to save $200,000 just by reviewing contracts, and this is true, I mean, it takes me generally less than 3 months to save between $100,000 and $200,000 just at looking at the numbers.
Yep.
How can I take advantage of that to bring more resources or something else for the team? So it's bringing together the business view and the strategic view, and having design operations not as something that executes a tactic. I mean, that's perfect for design program managers, because someone needs to execute the operational strategy, but someone needs to think, what are the right solutions? What are the problems? Because it's a design function. It's designing processes. It's assessing problems that are being experienced by the design team, by the cross-functional teams, or by both segments and both teams, and try to make things happen. So that's what excites me. I want to see design operations as a new C-executive level role, a strategic role that closes the bridge between business and design.
Oh, see, this is what's happened with design over the last 10 years, is that, you know, we went from being a service to the company that would just, it was all focused on output, to actually being an integral part of the business and an embedded part of the business that was, you know, at the top table. And it feels like at the moment, what you're talking about is spot on, in that design ops is currently in that service stage, where it is just a function that, you know, services the design team or services the product team. And actually, yeah, you're right. It's like the only way that we're going to deliver true value is if it's at that level where it is part of the strategic vision. Yeah, that makes... Oh, yes, you've got me excited now.
So do you want to join?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Design Ops Revolution?
I think this is now, we're starting our manifesto now, right? It's the Design Ops Manifesto.
Absolutely.
It's, okay, great. Well, I mean, you're going to have a lot of time to work on it because we're about to ship you off to your desert island as well. But so before we ship you off to your desert island, to make your stay more comfortable, you get to take a few things with you. So one of those is a piece of music that you'd like to listen to. One of them is a piece of literature. And then finally, one luxury item. So, Patrizio, let's start with the music.
Okay, that's easy. I'm a big fan of electro swing because it's fun.
Yeah.
It has a lot of good mood. It's energetic. It's a blend of past and present. So if I'm off to a desert island, I want to have fun.
That makes sense.
That was easy.
Do you have a specific artist that you'd take the discography of? Or
Caro Emerald, Parov Stellar.
A bit of Parov Stellar on the island would be phenomenal.
Exactly.
And then something to read?
That was a difficult question because my very favorite book, it's very tiny.
Oh, no.
So it's less than 100 pages, and it's Kapuscinski, who was a Polish journalist in the 70s and 80s and wrote a tiny book called The Others. Now, The Others is literally his discovery of his identity by looking at the people he met as a journalist across the globe, I mean, Africa and everywhere. It's a fantastic story. The story of the journalist, but the book, it's extremely dense. But it's too tiny. So because I think that the best books have to be yet written, and I would have a lot of time on the island, I will bring an empty notebook and write it.
Oh, that is a great answer. I'm also surprised nobody's done that yet. And then finally, you get to take a luxury item with you as well, so...
I don't like luxury items. So for me, the luxury is being able to smile and being relaxed. So probably I will bring my cat because you can never get bored with a cat, right?
It's very true. It's very true. Also a very good hunting partner.
Exactly. You never know. A mouse can be a good prey for both of us.
100%. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. I think it sounds like you're set to go now.
Yeah, I have my music, I have my notebook, and I have my cat. What else?
Thank you so much to Patrizia for joining us on Design Ops Island Discs. We're going to leave her on the island with the electro swing soundtracking the writing of her Design Ops manifesto while her cat dozes lazily in the sun at her feet. If you'd like to find out more about Patrizia, you can follow her on Twitter at LegoViews and read her Medium articles, which I highly recommend, at pat-bertini.medium.com. We'll put both of those links in the show notes for you so you can check them out later. Sadly, this brings a close to Season 2 of Design Ops Island Discs. If you enjoyed what you've been listening to, please, please go onto your podcast platform of choice and review us or share us to your network. It really helps us get in front of even more great people and spread the good word of Design Ops in the future. As we sail off into the sunset, I'd like to take one last opportunity to thank Zero Height, the design system documentation platform, who have been running everything for us in the background here. So thank you very much to them. If you want to find out more about Zero Height or jump in and create your first style guide for free, you can do so by heading over to zeroheight.com/podcast. Make sure you add the last part in so that you let them know that we sent you. Until next time, bon voyage.